Okay, we're beginning here with the new Masechet, Masechet Kiddushin. As far as location of Masechet Kiddushin, that's been dealt with in the previous Masechtot because of the layout of Seder Nashim. So Seder Kiddushin got left to the end because of other considerations of placing other Masechtot before that because of the order of the Masechtot that we found, which we discussed in Tubot and Nidarim, and the Gemara itself asked the question of the order. As far as Masechet Kiddushin is concerned, in terms of what Kiddushin is, Kiddushin is synonymous with Erusin. Kiddushin and Erusin are the ability to halachically become engaged to a woman. That engagement involves both the designation of the woman for this particular individual, which makes her miyuchad or miyuchedet for this individual, but also is oser her, that restricts her on anyone else. And that's what the halachic engagement does, is designates the woman for the particular man. But at that point of Erusin and Kiddushin, he is not yet married fully to the woman or mutar to the woman. That requires Nisuin. Nisuin is the next stage in which the woman goes from being basically asura lakol, restricted for everyone, not only for others, but even the Arus himself, to becoming mutaret or becoming the wife of that individual. In the time of the Gemara, Kiddushin and Erusin were done around a year before the Nisuin, which was the signal for the parties to get ready and prepare themselves for the upcoming marriage. And so again, when it was done at an age that today would be considered very young, you're talking about around the age, anywhere between the ages of 10 and 13, probably the women were getting married. At that time, they needed time to get ready, to prepare themselves, to bring in whatever materials and dowry that they were going to have in the marriage. And so therefore there was given time, the year, and the husband was given time to prepare himself to get a house, to have mizonot, a way to provide for his family. And so therefore there was time that was given. In the modern day, and it's obviously not so modern, it's been happening for many hundreds of years now, they moved it that the Erusin and Kiddushin and Nisuin happen simultaneously. And that at the chuppah we do everything. We have the Kiddushin at the beginning of what we call today the Chuppah. Then we have a small break of the reading of the Ketubah to separate. And then we do the Nisuin right away. The reason for that is to avoid a lot of issues, including once someone is an Arus, Arusa, they have Erusin and Kiddushin, they require a get, midoraita. Unlike, quote-unquote, secular engagement, where you have an engagement, they give a ring, they have vort, they have a party. None of that has any implications halachically. And therefore, if they want to dissolve the engagement, they simply call off the engagement. There's nothing involved in dissolving or annulling that engagement. On the other hand, with Erusin and Kiddushin, that type of engagement involves a Torah connection between them and requires a get to undo it. And so therefore, you're taking a significant step in making a halachic engagement, which will require a halachic dissolution of such Kiddushin and Erusin. So for that reason, plus the fact that once she is an Arusa, if the woman has any extramarital activity during that period of time, she is chayevet mita, it's much more involved. So because of that, they narrowed the scope of that time down to nothing, which is that they have the Erusin and Kiddushin and the Nisuin all in one bundle rather than separating them. In addition to the fact that people get married at later times now, and therefore this idea of preparing for the marriage is less significant because the parties are usually older, and therefore they've already made more significant steps in their life towards marriage, and obviously if they're dating for marriage, they're probably expecting to get married, and therefore we don't need that preparation time of the year beforehand. For that reason, to simplify everything, the Erusin and Kiddushin were brought together with the Nisuin. The second question that is very important here is, what exactly is Kiddushin? Is Kiddushin a mitzvah? Or is Kiddushin simply a method or stepping stone into marriage? Now, even if it is a stepping stone into marriage, it still could be a mitzvah. For instance, when you have a shechita, when a person wants to eat meat, there's no obligation to eat meat. One does not have to eat meat. But if they choose to eat meat, they have to do it through shechita. When they do it through shechita, that shechita is a mitzvah, and you make a brach on it. Asher kiddushanu mitzvotam v'tzivano, lishchot, or ala shechita. We have a bracha of Shechita. Same question applies by Kiddushin. Kiddushin is a vehicle by which a person can get married. It is the Hechik Timtza to allow individuals to get married. Therefore, maybe it's a mitzvah. And if it's a mitzvah, we'd expect to see a Birkata mitzvah. On the other hand, if it's simply a method for allowing you to gain access to something, then maybe it's not a mitzvah, it's simply a stepping stone, and then it won't require Birkata mitzvah. So if you look at the evidence through Shas on this manner, it leans heavily in favor of saying that it is not a mitzvah. First of all, we have the Mishnah in Masechet Beitzah. The Mishnah in Masechet Beitzah talks about Kol shechayivim alav mishum shvut, mishum reshut, mishum mitzvah, b'shabbat chayivin alav, b'yom tov, b'elohein mishum reshut. These are the items that are considered to be a reshut. Lo danim, v'lo mikadshin, v'lo chotzin, v'lo miyabmim. So one of the items here, it gives a list in the Mishnah in Beitzah about certain things that are asurim midrabanan. And then there, it gives you a different categories of items. It gives you categories of items that are Mishum Shvut, Mishum Reshut, and Mishum Mitzvah. The category Mishum Reshut are optional items. One of those optional items is considered to be Kiddushin. So again, the Gemara places Kiddushin in the category of Reshut. The Gemara itself says, Velo Mikadshin, you're not allowed to have Kiddushin on Shabbat. Vaha mitzvah kovit. He's doing a mitzvah. The Gemara answers, Latzricha, Ditle Isha Ubanim. He already is married with children. So therefore, this next marriage is not a mitzvah. What do you mean it's not a mitzvah? Kiddushin is a mitzvah. Why does it matter that he's already married to a woman and has children? Why does that impact at all? Rashi over there says, Nosei Isha Lifrot Vilarabot. Vamai Kakari Le Rishut. Person who's marrying a woman is marrying a woman in order to mikayim the mitzvah peru revu. If that's the case, it should be a mitzvah. The Gemara's answer is that he already has isha ubanim. He already has a wife and children, therefore he's already been mikayim the mitzvah peru revu. Is mikayim the mitzvah peru revu, there's no longer a necessity to get married, and there's no longer a mitzvah to get married. If that's the case, then there it's a reshut, not a mitzvah. So this Gemara has two sides to it. One side is clear that the Gemara calls Kiddushin a reshut. Number two is it sees Kiddushin as a vehicle to get to Pru Revu, and therefore maybe does not have a standalone status as a mitzvah. Although the Gemara, by saying that he already has Isha Ubanim, implies that had this been his first wife, that maybe there would be a mitzvah involved. Then you'd have to ask, how correlated is that with the mitzvah Pru Revu? The Gemara in Masechet Moed Katan says, Ve'elu kotvim b'moed. These are things that you're allowed to document on Chol HaMoed. Kiddushei Nashim, Gitin, Daideki, Matana, Pruzbolim, so on and so forth. It gives you a list of items that you're allowed to document on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara there says, Amar Shmuel, Mutar da'reis isha b'chol HaShomoed. One is allowed to have Erusin or Kiddushin on Chol HaMoed. Shema yikadmenu acher. The reason being that maybe someone else will jump the gun and acquire this woman or establish a Rusin or Kiddushin with this woman and he would lose out. So because there's a certain amount of competitive nature in the ability to be Ma'arez and Mekadesh and Isha, therefore we allow him to do it on Chol HaMoed for the risk that he might lose out and someone else will do it. The same reason that a Rusin and Kiddushin are allowed during the 9 days, maybe even on Tisha B'Av, for the same reason, which is Shema Yukadmenu Acher. So the Gemara says, Lema Misayile. Let us say that this is a proof to it. Ein Nusim Nashim B'Moed. One is not allowed to marry a woman on Chol HaMoed. Lo Betulot, V'lo Amanot, V'lo Miyabmim, B'nei Shesimcha Hi Lo. Because it is a Simcha for him. And that's the problem of Ein Me'arvim Simcha B'Simcha. You're not allowed to mix up Smachot. So if you're in the Simcha of Yom Tov, you can't have the Simcha of Nisuin. So then the Gemara says, let's be mitayek from that. Ha, la reis shari. That from that you would say, nisuin is restricted, but erusin would be mutarin. Gemara says, lo mi bai kamar. Lo mi bai la reis. Delo ka avid mitzvah. You don't need to tell me about erusin, where you're not even doing a mitzvah. Ela afilu lisa nami de kavid mitzvah asur. But by nisuin, where you are doing a mitzvah, then even that is asur. So the Gemara there again entertains the fact that Kiddushin or Erusin is not a mitzvah at all. And that's what Rashi says over there, the covered mitzvah, the oskim bepiria rivyo. What's the mitzvah of Nisuin? Pru or vu. What's the mitzvah of Kiddushin? Ein mitzvah. That's the way the Gemara seems to indicate again in Moed Katan. There is no mitzvah of Kiddushin. The last one deals with in Masechet Pesachim, the Mishnah there says, Holech Ishchot et Pischo. Someone is going to Shechtez Pesach Lemolet Beno. Lechol Sudat Erusin Bebeit Chamiv. He's going to eat the meal that celebrates the Erusin in his father-in-law's or future father-in-law's house. Suddenly remembers that he's still got chametz in his house. It's almost 30 days before Pesach, so we can mention it. So then he says, Aval, im yachol achzor v'or v'lachzor l'mitzvato, you can get all the way home, be mevayer the chametz, and then go back to doing the mitzvah. That's what he should do. Yachzor v'yevayer. V'im lav, mevatlo b'libo. If not, then he just nullifies it in his heart. The Gemara over there says, V'reminu, ha'olech le'chol sudat erisin bebeit chamiv, lishvot shvitat ha'reshut yachzor miyad. That the right over there says that you have to go back right away. You're not involved in a mitzvah. If you're not involved in a mitzvah, you got to go take care of the chametz. You don't have a right then to walk away from the mitzvah of bir chametz in order to do something that is of an optional nature. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Lokasha, Ha Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi. That is the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi. The Tanya. So that they receive reshut, Divi Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda believes that it's optional. Rabbi Yossi Omer, mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to have a Sudat Erusin. Now certainly if he believes that Sudat Erusin is a mitzvah, then certainly Erusin must be a mitzvah. You can't have a mitzvah to do Sudat Erusin unless Erusin themselves are a mitzvah. That would indicate here that Erusin are a mitzvah. V'ashta damrar merchista machloke b'sudah shniya. Avo b'sudah rishana divrei hakol mitzvah. That only in the second meal is it a question. But in the first meal, everybody thinks that that's a mitzvah. Afilu teima, hava, Rabbi Yehuda. Both could be altered by Rabbi Yehuda, and it depends if it's Sudah Rishona and Sudah Shniyah. But again there, if everybody holds that the Sudah is a mitzvah, then it's clearly a Sudat mitzvah revolves around a mitzvah. If that's a Sudat mitzvah, the mitzvah must be Kiddushin or Erusin. And that would imply that there is a mitzvah of Kiddushin in Erusin. That is manifest in a machloket between the Rosh and the Rambam. The Rosh himself asks about the Birkat Erusin that we make at the Chuppah. He asks two questions. One is, why do we make it after you do Kiddushin? If it's a Birkat HaMitzvah, Birkat HaMitzvah is always done over L'Asiyatan, prior to the fact. So many are Doche that question, including the Rosh brings the answer himself, that we're not sure if the woman's going to accept. You can't make a bracha on something where there is a Safek if the action's going to be carried out. Over here, he's proposing to the woman. He doesn't know if the woman will accept. It's not in his control. So he makes a bracha, and then he goes to do the kiddushin, and the woman doesn't accept. That becomes a bracha the batala. So you're not going to make a bracha ahead of time. Ipnei asafek. That's the joke about the individual who he's captured by the terrorists, and they're going to kill him, and he's going to die al kiddush Hashem. And so then he makes the bracha, asher kiddushanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu, shalamut al kiddush Hashem. And then he's waiting, and the terrorist is doing something. He's waiting because he can't control the situation. So the same thing here by Kiddushin. You have the same problem, which is that he makes the bracha on the Kiddushin, and then he proposes to the woman, and he's like waiting for an answer. Bracha levatala. So that's why you can't make the bracha beforehand. So that's one of the reasons that they say we make the bracha afterwards. But the Rosh continues to ask and says, any other bracha that we know that deals with a mitzvah is asher kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu, and then it should be l'kadeshet ha'isha. But that's not the nature of the bracha that we make. We make a bracha asher kiddishanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu ala arayot v'asolanu et arusov v'hitolanu et nisuot. It's a bracha that has nothing to do with kiddushin at all. And the bracha concludes mikadesh Yisrael yidei chupa v'kiddushin. So the bracha doesn't have to seem anything to do with the birkat mitzvah kiddushin. Therefore, the Rosh concludes that it's a birkat shevach v'hodah l'Hashem. That it's birkat and shevach, birkat hodah, whose placement normally is after you do the action, or after you engage in it. That's where the birkat shevach v'hodah comes. And that's why he believes that it's a birkat shevach v'hodah. And in describing the fact as to why there is no birkat mitzvah over here, he says, because it's not necessary to have kiddushin to accomplish the mitzvah of Pru'ah Revu'ah. So first of all, you see from the Rosh that he clearly connects between Pru'ah Revu'ah and the mitzvah of Kiddushin, if there was a mitzvah. And number two is, he says that we don't necessarily have Kiddushin be a mitzvah. One way he says is the person's already married with children. And then he gets married to another woman over there. Then you wouldn't have to make the bracha. Yet we still make the bracha of Ayidei Chupa v'Kiddushin. The fact that we make the bracha in that case shows you that it has nothing to do with the mitzvah, because there is no mitzvah in that instance. He's already been mekayim Pru'ah Revu'ah. Also, if he marries his keina, he marries a woman who cannot have children. All of those cases, we still make Birkat Erusin, despite the fact that there is no mitzvah of Pru'ah Revu'ah. That's number one. Number two is, you can accomplish Pru'ah Revu'ah without Kiddushin. Not because he has children out of wedlock, but because he can have a Pilegesh. And a Pilegesh, which does not require Kiddushin, at least according to the Rosh, therefore, you end up with a situation where, in a permitted fashion, accomplishes Pru'ah Revu'ah, and yet he doesn't need Kiddushin. So you see, the two are not interlocked or necessary to have Pru'ah Revu'ah. You don't need Kiddushin. For that reason, the Rosh concludes that Kiddushin is not a mitzvah. It is an option or a method by which to accomplish a mitzvah, but in itself is not a mitzvah at all, and therefore there is no Birkata mitzvah. And the bracha that we associate with Kiddushin Erusin is simply Birkat Shevach V'Hoda'ah. It's a machloket in Rishonim. I don't want to get so involved with that. How you have a Pilegesh that's not your wife, how do you get that status? Unlike other mitzvot, like Shechita, where it's an option to eat meat, but once you choose to eat meat, the Torah prescribes the methodology by which you do it. Gitin, divorce, which is not a mitzvah to get divorced, or maybe sometimes there is a mitzvah to get divorced. When you do the divorce, the Torah prescribes specific methodology for you to accomplish that mitzvah is through a get, and therefore it becomes a mitzvah. On the other hand, by Kiddushin, even though that might be the preferred methodology for you to accomplish the mitzvah of Pru'ah Revu'ah, so now you have two problems already. The prescription is for another mitzvah, right? So that's not even about the mitzvah itself. Both by Shechita and Gitin, we see the mitzvah itself as being doing the shechita or giving the get. Over here, the mitzvah is clearly, according to the Rosh, Pru'ah Revu'ah and not Kiddushin. So that's the first difference, which is that the Kiddushin is just the hechitimsa to get to the Pru'ah Revu'ah. Number two is, he doesn't even think if it's necessary to have Kiddushin to get to Pru'ah Revu'ah. You can accomplish the mitzvah of Pru'ah Revu'ah without Kiddushin, like we just said with Pilegesh. Number two is, there are many times that he marries and has Kiddushin without the mitzvah of Pru'ah Revu'ah being associated with it. So that shows you that the two are not necessarily interlocked. If they're not interlocked, then you can't claim that you're doing the mitzvah of Kiddushin to get to Pru'ah Revu'ah, because that's the prescription to get there. And first of all, it's not the prescription according to the Rosh. And number two is, even when you marry not the Pru'ah Revu'ah, the prescription still exists. And for that reason, he doesn't see it as being a mitzvah in Kiddushin. The one who argues on him is the Rambam. The Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvot enumerates Kiddushin as a mitzvah, and he writes there, in the mitzvah Reish Yud Gimel, he shetzivanu liv'ol b'kiddushin v'latei davar b'yad isha o b'shtar o b'biya v'zoi mitzvat kiddushin. So you see, the Rambam says that in order to get married and to process the marriage, kiddushin is a necessary step, and we have a mitzvah to do kiddushin in order to establish the marriage. The Rambam in Hilchot Ishut, in his header, the Rambam who has the beginning of every section in the Rambam, lists for you all the mitzvot that are in that section. So in Hilchot Ishut, at the beginning there, he writes, Hilchot Ishut, yesh b'chalalan arba mitzvot. There are four mitzvot that are included under this category. Shtei mitzvot asei, shtei mitzvot lo tasei. Two positive commandments, two negative commandments. V'zeu protan. These are the details. Lisha isha b'ktubah v'kiddushin. To marry a woman through ktubah and kiddushin is the first. The second one is, not to engage with a woman without ktubah v'kiddushin. Number three is, he has obligations towards the woman. And number four is, to accomplish Pru'ah Revu'ah. So you see a clear distinction, first of all, for the Rambam, between the mitzvah of Pru'ah Revu'ah and the mitzvah of kiddushin, that the mitzvah to get married, and this is along the lines, he looks at it like shechita and get, which is that you want to get married, kiddushin is the vehicle for getting married. That's the prescription of the Torah. The Rambam clearly views that as being a mitzvah that is separate from Pru'ah Revu'ah, but also a prescription of the Torah by which you get married. Now that might have to do with the Rambam's view of kiddushin as a whole, which is the Rambam in describing Kiddushin in Hilchot Yishut, says, Kodem Matan Torah, before the Torah was given, Adam Pugei Yisha B'Shuk, person meets a nice woman in the Shuk, Imratzahu V'hi Lisa, if they want to get married, Muta Machnisa L'Beito U'Bo'ala, Beino L'Bein Atzmo, he takes her home, he engages with her the way that a husband and wife get together, Te'lo L'Isha, and therefore she's designated as a wife, similar to the way that non-Jewish marriage would take place today, which is the designation of a woman to be this particular individual's wife, without any ceremony, without any introductory engagements. Simply, they are living together is what generates the ishut between them. Kevin shenitna Torah nitzdavu Israel she'en yirtze ish lirisa isha. So therefore, after the Matan Torah, there was a command given to Israel that if you want to acquire a wife or get married, ikna uta tchila bifnei edim. He has to accomplish that before edim. V'achar kach tiyeh lo l'isha. And then only after that will she be an isha, his wife, shenemar, ki kach ish isha u'ba'aleha. So the Rambam sees a mitzvah in generating the relationship between the parties prior to their engaging and being husband and wife. And then Halacha Bet, he writes, V'likuchim elu mitzvot aseh shel Torahim. And these likuchim, which we're going to see in the Gemara, references the Erusin and the Kiddushin, they're a mitzvah min ha-Torah. U'be'achad mishlusha dvarim ha-isha niknet. And that's our Mishnah today, in one of three ways that a woman is acquired. So you see from the Rambam, clearly he views it as a mitzvah. He views it as similar to get and shechita, which is the prescription of the Torah to engage in marriage. Now, what's interesting in itself is that the bracha of the Rambam with regards to Birkat Erusin is not very different than our bracha, and therefore he runs into the same problem as the Rosh, maybe. Because you see, Rambam Hilchot Yishut in Perek Gimel Halacha Chaf Dalet says, Ketzer Mivarech, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Asher Kedishanu Mitzvotav, V'hivdi Lanu Min Arayot, V'asa Lanu Et Aruso, V'hivdi Lanu Et Nisuim, Eidei Chupa V'Kiddushim, Baruch Atah Hashem, V'Kadesh Yisrael, Zuhi Birkat Erusin. You make that bracha on wine. Hear what the Rambam just said? He has the same nusach of bracha, but the order is different. You make the bracha without the yayin. But the Rambam clearly sees it as a birkat a mitzvah, rather than a birkat shevach hodah, because he places it before the erusin. Unlike the Rosh, sees the practice or the necessity to say it afterwards because, first of all, we don't want you to be a safek. And number two is, it's a birkat shevach hodah that doesn't require overly a siyatan. So much better doing it after the mitzvah, which is the placement of a birkat shevach hodah. The Rambam, who sees it as a birkat ha-mitzvah, says you gotta make the bracha beforehand. And therefore he says the order is birkat ha-yayin, birkat ha-erusin, and then erusin, because it's clearly a birkat ha-mitzvah for the Rambam. Over there, the Kesef Mishnah already says, Katav Rabbi Avram ben Osher Rabbeinu, Rabbi Avram ben Rambam, who is the Rambam's son, Sheik Shulo, Masha Katuv Rabbim, Mitzvat HaSeh Shel Torah, Lekadeshit Aisha, Masha Katuv Beperek Elu Migalchim. They ask from the Mishnah that we brought from Moed Katan, which clearly says that Kiddushin is a Rishut. It's not a Mitzvah. So how does the Rambam claim that Kiddushin is a Mitzvah when we saw those Mishnayot that declare it clearly a reshut and not an obligatory item and not a mitzvah? So what does he do with that? So lo mi bayi kamar, lo mi bayi the race, the lo avid mitzvah. Shasur el afil yisad, the kavid mitzvah. Nami asur, b'teretz. Shebeminyan ha-mitzvot, b'tchilat halacha amar shemitzvah lishta isha, b'kituba b'kidushim. V'lo amar l'kadesh isha. His answer was that his father said that the mitzvah is to do it through kidushin and ktuba, not simply kidushin. The Gemara over there is speaking about erusin below nisuin, but dailo ishlima mitzvah. If you do kiddushin alone, there's no mitzvah. Kiddushin is only a mitzvah if it involves also nisuin with it. And therefore, the standalone kiddushin, if you were just to look at kiddushin by itself, would not be designated or delineated as a mitzvah. In the context of nisuin, then kiddushin becomes a mitzvah, and therefore he's particular to mention kiddushin viktuba. Not simply Kiddushin. He needs Kiddushin and Ketubah, which leads you into Nisuin. And that's why the Kiddushin is a mitzvah. That's how the Rabbi Avram ben Arambam answers on behalf of his father as to why he considers it a mitzvah, despite the fact that the Gemara calls it a reshut. But what also comes out of this is what I've heard from my Rabbi Rosenzweig, is that Kiddushin is not simply a mechanical way to get at something. Not like Shkita and Get, which these are the mechanics by which you make something kasher, or you make something, two parties divorce through a Get, but Kiddushin is a more ambitious type of marriage or introduction to marriage. It's not simply that we say, oh, you want to get married, here's Kiddushin, because as the Rambam describes, before Matan Torah, there was no Kiddushin. You can generate marriage by simply living together, or being like husband and wife. We discussed that in the Gemara and Gittin on Pei Aleph, as to the problems that arise from that, whether you need a get afterwards in those situations. But what Kiddushin does is exactly what the word says, kadosh. It sanctifies marriage. It puts marriage in a different category. And therefore, Kiddushin is a mitzvah because it sets the tone and it sets the framework under which the marriage is beginning. And therefore, Kiddushin and making it a process of Kiddusha is important as a preface to the mitzvah of Pruravur, the mitzvah of Nisuin. And it's a standalone mitzvah, meaning it's a mitzvah to generate a certain relationship between the parties and to understand that this is a relationship of Kiddusha, and not simply a relationship of practicality, a relationship of simple pru or vu, but rather it's a mitzvah that the marriage be premised on a platform of Kiddusha. And that's where the Rambam might be more ambitious in saying Kiddushin as a mitzvah, that it's a mitzvah to generate the relationship in such a manner. And that's maybe why here it's different than what was before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. The Torah changes that dynamic or that idea of relationship and consecrates the relationship, which is why the word Kiddushin is used and not simply Erusin. Right? You could have used the word Erusin or Erusa, which is like the modern day engagement. But that's not the word. The word is Kiddushin because of the Kiddusha that is associated with it. And that might be what the Rambam is trying to convey to us within the concept of the mitzvah of Kiddushin, that it's not simply a hechitimtzah or a method or mechanics to get to something, but rather, in and of itself, it generates a framework, a Kiddusha, that is important, and that's why it's a mitzvah or a standalone mitzvah that we have to take seriously and is significant in generating the relationship between the husband and wife. Nothing. They're synonymous. But the fact that Chazal used the word Kiddushin are coming to indicate to you that Erusin is not simply just an engagement. It's much more than that. It's not simply designating a woman for a man. It's Kiddushin, and it's infused with Kiddusha. Erusin would be synonymous with the modern-day secular engagement. The fact that Chazal term it Kiddushin already overlays on that another aspect of Kiddusha that is associated here. And that Kiddushin, the Tosfot we'll see on the Amud Bet today, asks why we use the word Kiddushin, and he doesn't just necessarily describe it in that manner. But the Rambam clearly sees it as being an issue of Kiddusha. And because of that, they specifically use the word Kiddushin and not Erusin to describe that difference. It's not simply an engagement. It's much more than an engagement. It's much more powerful than an engagement. All right, with that we begin Masechet Kiddushin. Aisha niknet bishlalosh derachim. A woman is acquired in three drachim. The Gemara itself will ask about all these items. First of all, niknet, why use that lashon? Bishalosh, which is lashon nikeva, when you're using drachim, which is lashon zachar. How come the language, the Gemara is going to go through all of these items? Ha'isha, behe ha'idia, Tosfot already asks, why does the Mishnah begin with he'idia, ha'isha? Why isn't it just isha, niknet? It's the generic woman is acquired. What is ha'isha, the woman? Which the woman are we speaking about here? Tosafot does point out that many Mishnayot in Shas begin with Hey Ayidiyah. Tosafot tries to explain that the reason is because anything that is mentioned in the Torah, then the Mishnah uses the Hey Ayidiyah to reference the Torah. Kikach Ish Isha. So therefore, the Isha that is mentioned in the Pasuk, here the Mishnah is saying Ha Isha, but Hey Ayidiyah references that. In the end, Tosafot says that despite the explanation that he gives, which he seemingly is able to defend, nevertheless, in the end, what happens is the Tana himself, in making the decision to put out the make the Mishnah, uses what he called poetic license. And that poetic license lets him use the word or the version of the word that is most befitting or fits the best. And therefore, you don't can't prove anything necessarily from Ha'isha. Ha'isha is just a nicer way to put the Mishnah together. And that was the decision of whoever was putting the Mishnah together, and may not have significance in the fact that it just says Ha'isha with the Ha'idia. Good question. What you're noting, one of the Rishonim notes, that it says Ha'isha because it has particularly, it has to be a woman and not a Tana. Because a Tana cannot accomplish the kiddushin here by some of the methods that are noted. Because she is a ktana, she doesn't have a kinyan. She can't accept the shtar, probably. She can't do it through kesef, because there's no kinyan. Bia might work, but that is only when it's engendered through her father. So a katan wouldn't work, or ktana would not work in this case. And therefore, Ha'isha is coming to tell you it must be a woman of age in order to accomplish one of these three methods. Again, Tosafot gives a different reason, and in the end, his idea that it's a poetic license would also reject making any diukim out of the language, but there are those that want to suggest along the lines of what you just mentioned, that Ha'isha is referring to a woman rather than a ktana. So then, v'koneh atzma, she's able to acquire herself b'shtei derachim in two ways. Niknet, she can engage in kiddushin b'kesef u'b'shtar u'b'biyah, through money, a shtar or biyah. The way that that is done is the way we do it through kesef, or what we call shove kesef, the equivalent monetary value. That kesef, you say hariat mikudeshet li be tabadzu, or whatever vehicle of value that you are using. By shtar, he writes to her in a shtar, hariat mikudeshet li b'shtar zo, that you are married to me with this shtar, and he hands her the shtar. The shtar itself does not have to have underlying value. It's the shtar that creates the kiddushin, not the value. So if it's less than a, we'll see in a second, shavet puta or shavet dinar, that still would work by a shtar. By biyah, if he engages with her and says, hariat mikudeshet li b'biyah zo, then those are all methods by which he can acquire the woman. Now, in terms of the lashon of niknet, which the Gemara itself will ask about, why does the Mishnah use the word niknet instead of kiddushin or mikadesh, which is the way that the Mishnah uses it later on in the Masechta. So over here, there are those who want to suggest that niknet already is a negative connotation about that relationship between the man and the woman, that the man acquires the woman. And so therefore, they look at this in a negative light as being a little bit of a chauvinistic way to look at the acquisition of the woman and looking at the woman as property. Now, there are certain aspects of it that do work that way, but I don't think it has to be viewed in that light, especially after what we just spoke about kiddushin. And the idea here of generating kiddushin is something that is of kiddushah and involves much more than simply what we call an acquisition. Therefore, I don't think you have to look at the word niknet in a negative light. There are two things to take note of over here. One of which is that the methodologies by which you do this, kesef, shtar, and bi'ah. So then, when you're talking about a kinyan by kesef and shtar, which are vehicles that work in other places, you could argue that way. But bi'ah, which is particular to the area of marriage, then we're not talking about regular kinyanim anymore. We're talking about something that designates the woman or specifies the woman towards this man. That's number one. Number two is, what is the involvement in the woman in kiddushin? So most parties agree, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, that the woman has to be a willing participant, and she has to agree to the marriage. And in a sense, she's an equal partner here. She may not be able to initiate the kiddushin. She is as much a partner in the decision that the kiddushin are established by acquiescing to the overtures of the man. And therefore, she is a partner, an equal partner in the kiddushin. The one Rishon who formulates it in a way that the woman is almost completely passive is Daran in Nidarim, which we spoke about when we saw Daran in Nidarim. Daran in Nidarim simply says that the woman has to make herself available for Kiddushin, that she's not really an active participant or involved in the Kiddushin at all. That's the most extreme formulation of that. But most Rishonim believe that the woman is a participant or a partner in the Kiddushin because she has to agree. And her agreement is what generates the relationship between the parties. The last thing is that, and I've mentioned this many times, the name of Rebbe Reb Rosenzweig, that when it comes to certain vehicles that the Gemara or the Mishnah is speaking about, it looks for paradigms. It looks for paradigms that establish relationships between a party and something else. So over here too, when we say Aisha Niknet, because of Ishtar Biyah, you don't have to look at Niknet as being, oh yeah, this is an acquisition of property like any other property, but rather Aisha Niknet is, we have a way in the Torah, as well as in the Mishnayot, to generate a relationship between an individual and other property, or other individuals, when they're selling, buying things. That relationship, or that gemirat hadad, is generated through kinyan. So kinyan is a paradigmatic way for generating a relationship or an interchange between parties. So they lifted the idea of kinyan and brought it over to Ishut, not to say that this is a kinyan of property, but rather to say, if we want to establish a relationship between parties and we need gemirat hadat, We already have a paradigm in place that has that. And so we're taking that paradigm, lifting it and bringing it over here, and then we'll modify it to deal with the situation over here. But that's so they're using a paradigm that exists, not an equation of equivalence, but rather a paradigm by which we establish relationships, and therefore they use it here to also establish the relationship irrespective of the connotations that it has in other locations. And that will be the same fish is true here in this perek, where the Gemara will draw an equivalence between an Eved Knani and an Isha. Again, that's not an equation of equivalence, but rather it's an equation that says that we have a vehicle by which a person has a relationship with another party, and that relationship generates certain obligations between the parties, and a chiyuv and mitzvot, that you say that an Isha has a chiyuv and mitzvot like an Eved, or an Eved has like an Isha. Again, that's not an equation of equivalence. These are all paradigms by which we want to use the paradigm in another location. So we know that a woman is not chayevet in mitzvot aseh she'as man grama. That's a paradigm of someone who's not fully chayevet in all the mitzvot. So an Eved Kenani who has that same status, we follow the paradigm of a woman. It's not to say the two are equivalent or there's an equation of equivalence. Someone to say that I have a paradigm that exists, I want to use it somewhere else. So I use the paradigm because it exists. And again, not because they're equal in any way, but simply because I have now a mechanism that exists. I'm just going to use that mechanism in the other place. And so too over here with the word niknate, I think you can say a similar idea. Now, b'kesef, how does it work with the kesef? It's my own name, b'dinar u'b'shaveh dinar. That you use a dinar or the equivalent value of a dinar. B'dilomim puta u'b'shaveh puta. That you use a puta or the equivalent of a puta. This in Mishnah and Ediot, the Gemara's Mishnah says there that this is one of the places where Beit Shammai is the kula and Beit Hillel is the chumra. Because Beit Shammai over here requires a higher threshold in order to make the woman a surah. Now, even though the truth is that it is a kula that leads to a chumra, because in certain instances another person could come in and marry the woman if he used the lesser kesef. Nevertheless, from a bigger standpoint or from a bird's eye view, it's clear that Beit Shammai here is being more makil than Beit Hillel by requiring a higher threshold in order to wake the woman asura. Now, Tosfot over here asks, how do you know that dinar ubishaved dinar? We know from the Torah only that kesef works, that money works. How do you know that shove kesef, equivalent value, works? How do you know that? And Tosfot points out in many places in Shas, where you have a requirement for kesef, and then you want to use shove kesef, the equivalent value, that we need a specific pasuk to include it. So where is the specific pasuk over here to include shove kesef? So Tosfot answers and says, Aval gibbe kiddushin ve'erachin minolan, de shove kesef ke kesef. V'yesh lamar di afinan mi eved ivri. Says that we learned it out from an eved ivri, by an eved ivri. There we do have a riboy that says that kesef and shove kesef work, and therefore that paradigm by the Eved Ivri is brought over here to Arachin and Kiddushin to tell us that not only is money work, but even Shove Kesef, the same value, works. That's one way to answer it. Others answer that you only need a requirement of, or a limud for Shove Kesef, where you believe that Kesef is primary or most important. By cases where Kesef is a demand, and you would demand it only Kesef, so maybe there you would say no Shove Kesef. So for instance, by Nizakin, where someone does damage to another party, there you have to make restitution to the party. So over there it says you have to pay them back. Now, the Gemara says, we learn out from the word yeshiv, that you have to return the value that you can use even shaveh kesef. So why do you need a limit over there? Because you would have thought that when you make compensation or restitution, you have to pay money. You can't just pay shaveh kesef value, you have to actually pay in cash. Because you did damage, you got to give the person the best way to give the restitution is through live currency. So maybe there wouldn't be allowed. That's why you need a limud to teach you that shaveh kesef works. Over here, there's no reason to believe that it'll be kesef only and not shaveh kesef. There's no reason. It's the value that matters over here. It's not the money itself. And the money itself actually here might be to the detriment, which is that we don't use money today. But Gemara talks about that because we're worried about the fact that the person who gets the money is focused on the tzura, the item that is stamped into the coin itself. That is what creates the value, and we're afraid over time that that either could go out of circulation, that can be erased. And therefore, the woman is focused on something that is not going to contain or carry value, or may not have the real value. And therefore, when we use today, whenever we have in Kiddushin, we do it with, again with a ring, a plain ring. And we do it with something that has no images on it, because of that. Use a very, very plain ring without any images on it. So the focus is on the value of the item and the particular item that is used, and not on anything else that has
value or sentimental value to the individual. For instance, you have writing on the ring that has a pasuk, so the ring itself has value because of the gold or the silver that's there. But if the woman's focused on what's written on the ring, then what's generating the value to her is not the underlying value, but that which is written, and that's problematic. So we make a focus on the Shavah Kesef here might be even better than Kesef. Or there's no reason to believe that Kesef is better than Shavah Kesef, so maybe you don't need a limit over here. Again, Tosafot thinks that we learned it out from the fact that it is, we equate it to Eved Ivri. V'kamehi pruta, the Mishnah asks, what's the value of a pruta? Echad mishmona b'isara italki. It's 1/8 of a Italian isar. So there are two things that we have to know here. First of all, the Mishnah only asks about the pruta and not about the dinar. And that is because, as Tosafot mentions over here, the dinar is a well-known coin. It's a coin that was in circulation for a very long time, and its value was also fixed, and everybody knew what it was. A pruta, on the other hand, is not a well-known coin. It's a coin that is copper coin that is introduced later on, and it's not as extant as other coins. I mean, it's the equivalent of the penny or the one agura piece, which go in and out of circulation, and its value also shifted over time. I mean, it's a question of the relationship between the copper to the silver to the gold. That relationship seemed to move around, and also depended on the size. Here we're going to see the isar also seems to move around in value. In their day, all coinage was associated with the inherent value of the coin was the metals that were inside of the coins. And the way that coin shifted value was if they changed the mix of metals in the coin. And how pure the coin was might determine its value relative to other coins. Here we have an explanation of a pruta, not a dinar, for a number of those reasons. Number one, a dinar is a well-known coin that's been in circulation for a long time, but also something that has fixed value, does not fluctuate in its value. The pruta, on the other hand, is something that was not always in circulation or went in and out of circulation, as well as the fact that it wasn't always fixed, its value. Its value had to do with the relationship between the metals, where a pruta was made out of nechoshet and the dinar was either out of kesef or zahav, so that relationship moved around, as well as the fact that the isarim were not standard. That's why the Mishnah here says isar etalki, to tell you it's this specific type of isar and not the Greek isar, but rather the isar italki, because again, they're trying to establish the relationship. It's either a coin that they're not familiar with, or it's a coin that has value that shifts around. And for that reason, the Mishnah is trying to pin down the value of a pruta. V'koneh atzma, how does she acquire herself? Beget u'mitat abal, through a divorce, or by the death of her husband. There she comes back into, quote-unquote, ownership of herself, by the get, which severs the relationship with the husband, or the husband passes away, where the relationship no longer exists. Hayivama niknet bibia. The yivama here, who is seemingly a subcategory of the kiddushin before, niknet bibia, she can be only acquired by bia. That's the only way, mina Torah, that a yivama is acquired by the yavam, is through bia. Shtar and kesef are not relevant. Midrabanan. The Rabbanan introduced Shtar and Kesef through Ma'amar, but that's only a din de Rabbanan, and all that does is makes her Asura to the other brothers. I mean, that she can't perform Yibum with any of the other brothers, it just designates her to this brother in particular. But otherwise, it has no significance, even maybe Midrabanan, but more importantly, Midoraita. Midoraita, the only significant engagement between the parties is Biah, Bekone Tatzma, Bechalitza, Ubimitata Yavam. And she can acquire herself, or gets her own ownership back, either through chalitza, which dissolves the relationship here of the yavam to the yavama, or through mitata yavam, if the yavam passes away. Even if there was no chalitza performed, if there's nobody for her to perform yibum with, then there's no obligation for her to perform yibum. Tosafot over here asks, why does the Mishnah not say, similar to what it did in the introduction, on isha niknet b'shalosh drachim, koneh atatzma b'shtei drachim, why doesn't it say the same thing by yavama? Niknet b'derek achat, and shekoneh atzma b'shtei drachim. How come it doesn't do that? So Tosafot says, either because when you have one item, you don't do that. When there's only one way to acquire, you don't say, oh, there is one method to do it, even though we find in other places that it does say that. Others simply suggest that yivama is a subcategory, a subset of the kiddushin that were mentioned before. So the isha, which has three ways, is kesher, shtar, and bia. Bia is one of the subsets there, and the yivama is just a subset of that, and therefore you don't designate a specific number for her, because she's just the subcategory of kiddushin, and so we don't delineate it separately. And now the Gemara asks the question, there are those that suggest over here, including in the Geonim period, that the Gemara here, all the way through the first almost two daf of kiddushin, was a later addition to the Gemara by the Saboraim, because it doesn't have a feel like a normal Gemara, and the questions and the nature of the questions asked here are very nitpicky on the language that the Mishnah uses. So there's some that suggest that this was a later addition into the Gemara by the Saburaim. Others, again, say that no, that this is the way that the Gemara sometimes asks it this way. Maybe the Lashon is not the way it normally is, but still they believe that this was part of the original Gemara here. Saburaim are the individuals that sit between the period of the Amoraim to the period of the Geonim. They perform an important service of basically disseminating the Gemara. They're the ones who basically copy over the Gemara. Once it's established and written, they copy it over and again in order to disseminate it to all the people. Once it's been closed by Rav Ami and Rav Asi, closed the Gemara, they become basically the printing press for them, but a handwritten printing press. And they have strong influence on, again, the language that's used and the way that it's laid out. And therefore the Saburaim have an important influence over the Gemara itself. Aisha Niknait. So it says here, Aisha Niknait. And again, Lashon Niknait, we said, was interesting. We described maybe why it's used or why it's not meaning exactly what you would think it means in terms of acquisition. If you go to the second parak, just so you know that this is the longest parak in Shas, the first parak in Kiddushin. So we won't get to the second parak for a very long time. So it will be a 40 or so daf before we see the second parak. But the second parak begins, Aish Mikadesh. So there they use the Lashon of Kiddushin. And over here they use the Lashon of Isha Niknait. Why don't we say over here, Ha Isha Nitkadeshet, which would match the Lashon that is used later on in the Masechta of Aish Mikadesh. Mishum Dekaiba, Amai Lemitnei Kesef. Because he uses his money here. V'kesef minole. And how do we know that Kesef works for Kiddushin? Gomar Kicha, Kicha Mistei Afron. We learn how to say Rishava of Kicha, Kicha. That's the word that's used here. From the field of Ephron. The field of Ephron is the story by Avram Avinu and the acquisition of Marat HaMachpelah from Ephron. Tivach, it says here in the Parsha of marriage, Kikach Ish Isha. Tivachotam, it says there by the Parsha that describes Avram's acquisition of Marat HaMachpelah, Natati Kesef HaSedeh, Kach Mimeni. I'll give the money for the value of the field, kach mimeni, take it from me. So you see the word likicha is used in that context as well. So then we have kicha kicha. So that gives you, first of all, the relationship between kiddushin and that which happened by the field. The kicha ikre kinyan. And how do we know that kicha itself is a form of kinyan? Dichtiv, as sadeh asher kana Avraham. Later on in Sefer Breshit and Parshat Vayechi, when Yaakov Avinu is describing to Yosef about Marat HaMachpelah, he says there that Marat HaMachpelah is an asadeh asher kana Avraham, that which Avraham acquired. So you see the word kinyan is used there, and that kinyan is describing the relationship between him and Ephron, or what transpired between him and Ephron. So the kicha that is described in Parshat Chayei Sarah is referenced in Parshat Vayechi to be a kinyan. So you see an equivalence between kicha and kinyan, that it works as a kinyan. Inami sadot bekesef iknu. They quote the pasuk in Yirmiyahu that we saw already in Gittin a number of times, that fields with money they will acquire. So you see there again, fields are acquired, or there's kinyan by fields. Now even though generally you do not learn divrei Torah, I mean divrei Kabbalah, here we're trying to learn a din d'oraita, and you're bringing a pasuk for Navi, over here it's not a limud, it's simply a giloy milta, which is that the limud is kicha kicha, that equates the acquisition by Avram of the field to the kicha by kikach ish isha. Again, that's not acquisition, that it's property, but acquisition, this is a method by which people can have gemira tadat. This is a method in which you establish a relationship. So kesef is used there by the field. Kesef can also be used by kiddushin. Now, we want to know that that's a form of kinyan. That is a gilui milta to teach us that the word kicha means kinyan. So either you bring the pasuk in Vayechi, or you bring the pasuk from Yirmiyahu. Both of them just show you that the kicha that was mentioned by Ephron means a kinyan. So that's a giloy milta. That's not a limud. That's simply making clear to us, or defining for us, the word kicha, which is kicha means kinyan, or is equated with kinyan in other places. And that's why you can use you can use the word of a Navi in order to establish the meaning of something mi de oraita. So it's nay, Aisha Niknait. Therefore, here we use Aisha Niknait because of Kesef. So the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, then why don't we create a parallel structure to the Mishnah over there? So our first question was, it's Aish Mikadesh. So over here it should be Aisha Nitkadeshet. Now the Gemara says, no, over here we need it to be Aisha Niknait because of Kesef. So then the Gemara flips the question and says, why don't we say over there, Aish Koneh? Instead of saying Aish Mekadesh, why don't we say Aish Koneh? Mikara Tana Lishna Do Raita. At first, the Mishnah uses the Torah Lashon. V'sof Tani Lishna De Rabbonon. And there, afterwards, it uses the Lashon of the Rabbonon, which is Kiddushin, which is what we discussed before, that the Rabbonon, in changing the Lashon to a Lashon of Kiddushin, are implying through that something more than simply Erusin or Kinyan. That reason that the Chachamim particularly uses the Lashon of Kiddusha is to imply something about Kiddushin. So here the Mishnah wants to use up front the Lashon of the Torah, but later on it uses the Lashon of the Rabbanan. So now my Mishnah the Rabbanan. So what is the Lashon of the Rabbanan? What does Kiddushin mean? So Gemara says, the Asa La Kuliyama Kehekdesh, that he makes her a sur to everybody else like Hekdesh. So that Tosfot already takes up and he says, that's what Hariat Mikudeshet Li, Klomar, Li Mikudeshet Liolam Bishvili. You will be designated, delineated to me in particular, to the exclusion of all other parties. So you're making everybody else a sur. He says, Upashta the Milta, and the simple explanation of the word is Mikudeshet Li, Miuchedet Li, Umuzemenet Li. You are designated to me, prepared for me. So Lashona of Kiddusha is to designate a person or an item for a particular purpose. That's why, by the way, in the Torah, the word Kiddusha is not only used in a positive sense, but also in a negative sense. A harlot is called a Kedesha, because she is designated for Znut. Her being designated for a particular purpose, the word Hekdesh is also properly used in that context. It's not just Hekdesh in the sense of holiness, that we use it in the Mikdash, the context of Hashem. Hekdesh, or the meaning of the word Kedusha, has both negative and positive connotations, but in the sense of being designated for a particular purpose. So that purpose can be holy in nature, it can be uplifting in nature, or it can be something that is ra'ah, something that's negative in nature, like znot, and that's what a kedusha is. But over here, of course, when we're talking about marriage, again, using the word of kedusha to designate the woman, here you're designating the woman for this particular man, but in designating, when you do designate something, and you align it for a particular purpose, then you also have in mind there are kavanot that are associated with that, and that might be the imbuing of kedusha in the marriage, which is, why do you have to designate someone, or just, why can't you just do it? And why do you have to prepare something ahead of time? Why do we designate this to be used for a particular purpose? That means that preparation, kavana, you're having a certain view or perspective on the object, and that involves preparation and the way that you think about it. So Kiddushin also does the same thing, where you designate the woman for this particular individual that has meaning. I mean, it imbues meaning in the relationship that's going to happen, and that's going to be established between the parties, and not simply here, we get together and it's done. No, there's preparation, there's looking ahead. That's what Kavanah and Kiddusha involve. And that's why the word Kiddushin is used in this particular case. Tosfot over here says that the word Kiddushin or Mikudeshet only works by a woman because of the particular nature of that relationship, which is that when you designate the woman, not only is she designated for this particular individual, she becomes a surah to everyone else. That's not true by other items. So he said, if you were to use the word Mikudeshet by a loaf of bread or by an inanimate object, over there, we would not say the same thing. That means that, oh, you're designated for yourself and making everybody else a sur in the object. That's not the meaning of the word Mikudeshet in that case. So therefore, the word itself either is not used in that context, because that's not what is happening, or if you use the word in that context, it just means that's mine or I'm designated for me. It doesn't make everybody else a sur. It's only here in this particular relationship where the designation of the woman towards the man makes her a surah lakol, is the word Kiddushin relevant. Just like by Kiddusha, when you're makdish something to Hekdesh, it makes it restricted to everyone else except for Hekdesh. So too by the woman, you have the same function over here that designated for this particular man makes her a surah lakol. And that's why there is a reason to use the word Kiddusha or Kiddushin over here rather than in other places where we're being mazmin or miyached, an object. It won't work as well, or it doesn't function in the same way, and for that reason, Kiddushin is particular to the relationship between a man and a woman. So Mar says, V'nitne hocha, Aish koneh. So then, why don't we just start over here, Aish koneh? Why do we say Aisha niknet, which are talking about the object of the kinyan, rather than the initiator of the kinyan? Shom dekai by the mitna seifa. Because we have the seifa, which says, Akoneh atzma, that she acquires herself, bidida. Oh, there, it's her.
where the subject of the Mishnah is the woman. So now, Tana Nami Resha Bidida. Therefore, since the Sefer had to be with her, therefore the Resha, they also did it with her. Vinitne Haish Kone Umakne. So why don't we say that the husband is Kone Umakne, that he acquires and Makne gives over rights? Can't say Aish Kone La, grant her that, but it's the woman acquiring her rights back. So therefore, we say, okay, fine. So don't say Aish Kone in both aspects of the Mishnah. Say Aish Kone in the beginning, Umakne, and then he grants her the rights in the second part of the Mishnah. So that's what we just discussed, that Makne doesn't work either because of Mitata Baal. There are only one of these two aspects, one of the two methodologies of the husband granting her the right, or Mimakne her the right. That is not the case by Mitata Baal. Because of Mitata Baal, Love Ihu Kamakne, he's not granting her the right. Min Shmayahu Demakne La, from the Shamayim, meaning that's an automatic outcome of his death, is that she gains her rights back. So the Mishnah, at first the Gemara suggests, let's say Aish Koneh. Aish Koneh doesn't work because it only works in one of the two aspects. He's Koneh, the woman, in the first three aspects of Kesef Shtar and Biyah, but by Get and by Mitah, he's not Koneh. He acquires nothing. He's granting her rights. So Gemara says, okay, then write it that way. Ish koneh, by ish makneh. So he acquires her, and then the second half of the Mishnah, he grants her rights. Gemara says that doesn't work either because he's not granting her the rights in all those cases. On one of the two cases, he grants her rights. That's by get. By mitai, he grants her no rights, and therefore it's not the right lashon. There were two ways which a woman acquires herself. So either she gets a get. Over there, you could say that the man grants her that right, and therefore you could use ish koneh or ish makneh. But on the other hand, when it comes to death of the husband, there the man has no part in the kinyan. So it would not work in that case of mitata baal. When the husband dies, the woman gets back, quote unquote, her ownership of herself, not because the husband handed it to her, but simply because the husband doesn't exist anymore. In that case, the husband has no part in granting her her rights or granting her her autonomy back. And that's because he simply passed away. And then so he has no involvement in it. So therefore, you couldn't write in the second half of the Mishnah where it says, yes, Aish Niknet, you could have, Aisha Niknet, you could have started out Aish Koneh, because those are two sides of the same coin. On the other hand, when it's Koneh Tatsma, that is not true. Those are not two sides of the same coin, because then only in one of those two methods that the woman acquires her autonomy is the husband involved, which is when he grants the get. But in the case of the death of the husband, he's not involved in that. She simply gains her rights back automatically with the death of the husband. But the husband doesn't generate that. He's not doing anything actively to generate it. Even there, it's a byproduct of his suicide is that she gains her rights. It's not because he's committing suicide to give her those rights. That's not the case. The other reason we don't want to say ish koneh, because that would imply that the husband has the right to do this without her permission or without her acquiescence to this. Simply goes up there and says, we're married, we're getting kiddushin, and it's done. So Tana Isha Niknate, the tape writes Isha Niknate to tell you, Demidata in, if it's with her acquiescence and with her joint agreement, that's how the condition takes place. Shalomi Data Lo. Without her permission, it does not take place. So that's importantly what I said before about the relationship here, that the woman is an equal party to the Kiddushin, because she has to be Midata. Again, I mentioned the Ran's formulation, which basically makes her a passive party here. Somebody says that she doesn't stop the Kiddushin. She doesn't reject the overture of the man, and she's temporarily a passive party. All the other Rishonim view it as being an active participant here, that she must agree to the Kiddushin in order for it to work. My area, Ditani Shalosh. Why does the Mishnah use the Lashon Nikevav Shalosh? Litnei Shlosha, which is the proper formulation. If you're using Drachim, Derech is Lashon Zachar. So then it says Shlosha Drachim. Why does it say Shalosh Drachim? So Litnei Shlosha, Mishum Dekai Bimitnei Derech. Because it uses Lashon Derech. The Derech, Lashon Nikevahu. Because Derech is Lashon Nikevah. I just said it was Lashon Zachar. Here, the Gemara says Lashon Nikevah Dichtiv. Because the pasuk says, "Vodat lahem et aderech yelchuba," that you will tell them the path by which they will go. You see, the word "ba" is used to define derech. Ba is nikeva. It's only that the word derech is nikeva. Mar says, "Va'alahad zetanya." Well, then, if you're telling me the word derech really is a lashon nikeva, then every place that it's used, it should use a lashon nikeva. Yet we have a brayta, tanya b'shiva drachim bodkim et azav. In seven ways, we check the Zav. Nitne Sheva. Then why don't you write Sheva in Lashon Nekevav? You tell me the word Drachim, derech is lashon nekeva, then it should be sheva drachim and not shiva drachim. Now, the bright over there is speaking about a zav, which is that if a zav has an emission, if there is a cause for the emission that he has, that cause makes it ois zav. It's not a zav anymore. And therefore, there, the Mishnah lists seven items that cause a person to have an emission, and that emission will not be deemed to the emission of a zav. There it says, machal, mishtev, eats a lot. He drinks a lot. B'matzah, he carries a heavy item. B'choli, he's sick. Or b'kfitzah, he's jumping up and down. Umar eh, v'hir hur. Don't forget, the Gemara says, whether it's thoughts, other items that cause a person to have a seminal emission, all of those can cause an emission that is not the emission of a zav. Because a zav's emission cannot be something that happens or is caused by another item. Again, it has to be something that comes because of the particular issue of zav. So the Gemara says, "Mishum dekabalaitle mitnei derech." V'ashkei derech tikre lashon zachar. Because over there it uses the lashon derech. Lashon derech is a male conjugation. Dichtiv v'derech echad yetsu elecha u'b'shivad derechim yenusu lifanecha. So there it says derech echad and not derech achat. So you see there that the modification of derech is done with lashon zachar and not lashon nekeva. But now you have a problem, because you have one pasuk that calls derech nekeva, and one pasuk that calls derech zachar. So now you have psukim that are suter, achat et sheni, one makes it the lashon zachar, one makes it a lashon nekeva. So how do you reconcile that? And same thing with the mishnayot here. You have a mishnah that uses it lashon nekeva, and we have a bright that uses it lashon zachar. Yochi kashi kray ha'adodi. We have a stira contradiction in the psukim, kashi nami matnitana ha'adodi. And we also have a stira between the Mishnayot. Kraya dodi lo kashion. The psukim are not really a stira. They're not a contradiction. Hochod v'torah kai. When you're talking about Torah, v'torah ikra l'shon nekeva. And Torah is something that's formulated l'shon nekeva, dichtiv. Torah tashem tmima, mishiva nofesh. That the Torah of Hashem is complete and whole. It revives the individual. Over there you see Torah. Torah is l'shon nekeva. So there, where the word derech is coming to replace the word Torah, derech is used b'lashon nekeva, because it says you will teach them the way. Odat lahem et haderech. You'll teach them the path to take. That path is the path of Torah. So where the word derech is used to replace the word Torah, it means that it's used in lashon nekeva. Katam lo b'lashon nekeva. Hotam demimulchama koi. Over there, where the derech echad yetsu elecha is used as a reference to battle or war. There, even though the word milchama itself is lashon nekeva, nevertheless, when you're talking about battle, the darko shel ish lasod milchama, vein darko shel isha lasod milchama, where the nature of who wages battle is that the man wages battle and the woman doesn't wage battle, therefore they use derech lashon zachar to associate it with the individuals who are involved in the milchama, who are the males. So therefore, katav lo lashon zachar. Therefore, it writes it, b'lashon zachar. Tosafot notes two things over here. First of all, we have words in the Torah that are used both b'lashon nekeva and lashon zachar, which is like the word shemesh. Sometimes the word shemesh is used b'lashon zachar in the Torah. Sometimes it's used b'lashon nekeva. So we do have instances of nouns that are used in the Torah in female and male conjugations. So Tosafot says, ein ochanami. The reason the Gemara does not use that answer is because the Gemara, where it has the opportunity to explain it, we will explain it. If we can explain the phenomenon, or we can give reason for the phenomenon, we will do it. If we can't, we won't, and we'll leave it as saying, oh yeah, the word has two meanings. But if we can explain it, we'd much rather explain it than leave it simply as a word is both Lashon Zachar and Lashon Nekeva. Second thing Tosafot points out is, doesn't Torah have the same rule as Milchama? The obligation to learn Torah is on the men and not on the women. So why don't you say the same thing by Torah? The obligation is on the man and not the women. It should be Lashon Zachar and not Lashon Nekeva. That's what it says here, V'yesh lomar delo domi. That the cases are not comparable. D'ocha b'Torah gufei ka'oi k'rai, t'kri katov l'shon derech lo koi b'lom dea. Over there, the pasuk is not talking about those that learn Torah. It's talking about the Torah itself. So when you're referencing the Torah itself, who learns the Torah is not relevant. Whereas over here, b'katuv yatsue lecha anshe milchama koi. Over there, when it's talking about they will come against you, they will come to battle with you, it's talking about the troops. It's not talking about the battle itself, it's talking about the troops that enter into the battle. And therefore, it's referencing the parties to the battle where it's relevant that they are male and not female.
So that's an important distinction that he makes, that yes, Ein Ochanami, if you were talking about the parties that are engaged in Torah, then you might have argued that it should be Zachar as well, because they're the ones obligated in Limud Torah, and not the Nikevot. But there it's talking about Torah inherently, not the learners of Torah. So here it's not talking about the battle itself, it's talking about those that go to battle, which are the troops. And that difference then plays out in the nature of the difference that the Gemara notes over here. I think you could have answered as well for Tosafot, that by women maybe not be obligated to learn Torah, but they're still obligated to follow the Torah. And the Torah has what's relevant to the women. It gives them instructions and tells them what to do. And therefore they are also engaged in Torah, as we've spoken about in Sotah with regards to women's learning and what is the exact obligation of the woman vis-a-vis learning of Torah. So now, what about Matznitana de Lokashin? The stira between the Mishnayot is not a problem. Hacha de Gabai Shakai, over here, where the subject of the Mishnah is the woman, Tani Lava Lashon Nekeva, use Derech as a Lashon Nekeva. Hotam de Gabai Ishkai, over there where it says, Vad Rachim Butkim et Azav, there it's referencing to the man. The Darko Shal Ishli Vadek is the way of the man to check, Vain Darko Shal Ishali Vadek. It's not the way of the woman to check. And that is because da isha nami bones mitama. A woman, if it happens against her will, meaning that she has a sighting of dam, it doesn't matter whether that was quote unquote a willing sighting or unwilling sighting. No matter what type of sighting she has, if she sees dam, she is tmeya. It's irrespective of how that dam came about. So therefore, it uses tane lashon zachar, use lashon zachar where that is relevant. By the zav, it's relevant whether it came out willingly or unwillingly or was caused by other items. That is relevant by the Zav, it's not relevant by the Zavar or by the Nida. And for that reason, it's formulated Lashon Zachar over there, because the subject is the Zav or the Ish. So my time, Tani Shalosh, Mishum Drachim. So Gemara now takes a step back and says, wait a minute. The whole reason you're telling me that you wrote Shalosh and it came out over here is because you used the word Drachim. So don't use the word Drachim. Nitnei Dvarim. Use the word Dvarim and Nitnei Shalosha. Shalosha Dvarim. Why do you have to say Shalosh Drachim? So Mishum, the Kabbai, the Mitnei Bi'ah. Biyah ikre derech. Because dvarim and derech, like you're saying, mean different things. And over here, it's appropriate to use derech, a method by which you do something. Because when you talk about kesef and shtar, you could talk about a davar, that using a item to generate the kiddushin. Biyah is an intangible item. And therefore, derech is a more appropriate word to be used by biyah, especially since that's the way the pasuk delineates it, dichtiv. B'derech gever b'almana, kein derech isha mina efet. Right, so here again, the word derech there is used in a lashon nikiah to reference to bi'ah, but it says derech gever b'almana, the way that a man is together with a woman, referencing to bi'ah. So you see the word derech is used synonymously with bi'ah, or that's the proper way to describe it rather than dvarim. So hatinach bi'ah, that makes sense for bi'ah. Kesef ishtar ma'ikol meimar. Kesef and shtar, as we noted, could be used. The word dvarim is just as appropriate by kesef and shtar. Bishum bi'ah. So the Gemara says, because of bi'ah, it generated, it used drachim. The Gemara says, betani tarti atuchada. That doesn't make sense. Why is bi'ah governing over here when it's two against one? Kesef and shtar would have worked with dvarim. Bi'ah would not have worked with dvarim. But that's two against one. Why would you force the Mishnah to use drachim because of bi'ah? The Gemara says, hanechnami tzorech bi'ah ninhu. These are not independent of bi'ah. Even kesef and shtar are going to result in nisuim, or consummation of a marriage, which is through bi'ah. So they are a vehicle by which one enters into the engagement of bi'ah. V'ba'itema, and some suggest that, ha'mani Rabbi Shimoni, that the author of the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon, the time Rabbi Shimon omer, mipnei ma'amra Torah, ki ikach ish isha, v'lo katav ki tilakach isha li'ish. Why does it say here that the man acquires and generates the kiddushin with the woman? Why doesn't it just simply say, when a woman is taken by a man? Why is there a particular language of kikach ish isha? Because it's the nature of man to chase after a woman. That is both the inherent nature of man to chase the woman, but it's also something that was already designated from Briyat Olam. But it's not the way of the woman to chase after the man. Now, again, both in a manner of the man is the initiator, the man is one who grants the kiddushin, but also in the natures of the two parties. A man has a sexual drive that drives him much harder towards the woman, irrespective of is otherwise rational thoughts, the woman makes much more of a rational decision in her attempting to attract the man. Mashal, Adam Shabdalo Aveda, Mashal to an individual has lost something. Mi chozer ami, who goes to look for whom? Bal Aveda mechazer Aveda to, the one who lost the object looks for the lost object. On the other hand, the lost object doesn't look for the owner. It's a reference, as Rashi says, to Briat Olam, where the rib of the man was taken out to create the woman. So he lost something, meaning that it was taken out of him, so he's going to find his missing rib. And so the woman is that missing rib. So he looks for his missing rib. The rib doesn't look for her place inside of the man. And that's why the man looks for the woman. Also, the idea of the rib also here talks about the special, unique relationship between a man and a woman where they are part and parcel of each other and they complement each other and they fill each other out. What about the Mishnah? B'zayin drachim bodkim et hazav litnei dvarim. So why do you use drachim over there? You should use dvarim. Hatam ha-kamashvalan. Over there, it's coming to teach you. The darcha de michla yitera l'tuyele de ziva. It's coming to teach you that these problems generate ziva, which is that the way of someone who eats a lot is to end up with an emission. Darcha de mishkaya yitera. Someone who drinks a lot, l'tuyele de ziva, brings the ziva. It's teaching you something. It's not just simply these items. It's telling you that engaging in these items in excesses or in this manner generates the ziva. And so therefore the word derech is much more appropriate than the word dvarim over there. It's not simply talking about objects, we're talking about methods or behavior that will generate this outcome. And therefore, derech is the appropriate word versus the word dvarim. Okay, we're going to stop here on the second to last line on the bottom of Bet, Amud Bet.